Support for NPR comes from ADP. Say you're in HR and a solar flare adds an extra hour to each day. How would this impact business? ADP designs forward-thinking solutions to help your business take on the next anything. ADP, always designing for people.
Mariah Carey's landmark album, Butterfly, recently turned 25. The album is certified 5 times platinum and includes singles like Honey and, my personal favorite, Breakdown. So we thought it would be a good time to revisit our conversation about the one and only Mariah Carey. It's been over 30 years since her debut, and the singer-songwriter seems as omnipresent as ever, thanks to a perennial holiday hit and her devoted and social media savvy fan base. What is it about Mimi that's made her one of the most enduring pop stars of our time? I'm Aisha Harris, and in this encore episode of NPR's Pop Culture Happy Hour, we're talking about the music and meaning of Mariah Carey.
This message comes from NPR sponsor, BetterHelp. It's easy to ignore your social battery and spread yourself too thin. Therapy can provide the tools and self-awareness to help you learn how to recharge, define your boundaries, and build a social life that doesn't drain your battery. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp Online Therapy. Fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Visit BetterHelp.com/NPR today to get 10% off your first month.
Joining us today is Brittany Luce. She's the co-host of For Colored Nerds and the soon-to-be host of NPR's It's Been a Minute. Hey, Brittany.
It's good to be back, especially today.
Yes. And also here from his home in Brooklyn is Rich Jezwiak, senior writer for Jezebel. Hey, Rich.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Yeah, I'm excited to have you on too, both of you. It's going to be a fun conversation.
For sure.
Now, if you follow Mariah Carey on social media, you are well aware of her hashtag MC30 campaign, a celebration of 30 years in the music business. In recent months, she's dropped previously unreleased music from the vault and reissued a bunch of her albums in vinyl for her diehard fans. She's also released a memoir and audiobook, The Meaning of Mariah Carey, which provides detailed backstories for beloved songs like The Fantasy Remix featuring Old Dirty Bastard, which is one of my personal favorites. So we figured it's a good time to dive into all things Mariah Carey and reflect on her impressive career by examining a few tracks from her deep catalog. Now, first, I want to start off with finding out where we, the three of us, are all coming from when it comes to our respective appreciations for Mariah Carey. Brittany, is there a specific song or album that you think converted you into becoming a Mariah Carey fan?
I don't know if I ever became a Mariah Carey fan. I think I was like born into it. Like her first album came out when I was probably a toddler or something like that. And then the Emotions, Music Box, Daydream, Butterfly, Run, even through Rainbow was like my whole girlhood. So like my whole girlhood was kind of defined by Mariah Carey. She had songs that, you know, we sing in the car with my parents, like Emotions, but also like Hero or My All. Like some of my first memories of like slow dancing at middle school dances were like to those songs. Emancipation of Mimi, that came out when I, like the year I graduated from high school and started college.
Me too.
Ooh, I mean, like all, so much of my young heartbreak is defined by like even listening to Mariah Carey songs and getting the strength to love again. Like now it's so exciting to kind of be able to see her as like truly the 50-year-old woman that she is, and also be able to sort of understand her at an adult level and like really processing so many of the things that she went through that she's finally being more open about. Mariah was like Whitney or Janet to me growing up. Like she was just always on the radio. She was always in the air. And I couldn't extricate her musical influence from my life.
I think you and I had very similar trajectories, but I will elaborate on that in a minute. Rich, for you, I know that you told our producer, Mike Katziff, beforehand that you didn't actually come to really get into Mariah Carey or find her interesting, at least, until the cracks in her public image began to show. Can you say a bit more about that?
Yeah, of course. I mean, I paid attention to her from the beginning. I remember Vision of Love coming on the radio, not knowing who she was, thinking it was a Whitney Houston song because their tones were similar and it was really hard to untangle initially. You know, I'm older than both of you, so I was like probably 10, 11 when she debuted. I liked her because I liked pop music, period. She was just in the ether, so much so that it was kind of saturated with Mariah Carey, just album after album in the 90s, hit after hit, you know? And it was really easy to look at her as sort of an inevitability. And I think that's part of the reason why maybe the critical response wasn't there initially. And so she's sort of this workhorse, this chart statistic, constantly racking up these numbers. And it wasn't until Glitter that there was any sense of creative humanity, let's say, this idea that she actually could release something that was imperfect or not accepted by the wider public. And that had never happened to her before. And all of a sudden, she becomes that much more interesting to me. You know, I do have a taste for sort of camp, and I knew going into Glitter that it really could deliver on that level. But I think it colored her in a way that like hadn't been previously, because she was sort of this image of perfection for so long. The cracks start to show. Now we have a human here to work with, and all of a sudden she's that much more fascinating.
Yeah, and I think also just her music. I mean, obviously, even Butterfly preceded the public cracks showing. But Butterfly, she talks about in the book being a very transitional period for herself, and we'll talk a little bit more about that. But
yeah,
for me, I also very much appreciated when things got more specific when it came to her music. Like you, Brittany, I probably remember Mariah from as long as I could. I was sentient. My mother definitely bought the first three cassettes of her studio albums. And then I remember Daydream just being Always Be My Baby and Fantasy being on the radio all the time. Like, it was just inescapable, in the same way that like Hootie and the Blowfish were inescapable at the same time. It was like, it was those two songs like playing throughout. And the first album that I bought myself, or rather, quote unquote, my mom gave me money to buy and was my own, was Butterfly. And I remember listening to Breakdown over and over and over on repeat, the song she does with Bone Thugs and Harmony, Crazy Bone and
Wishbone?
And Wishbone, yeah.
That was like Lazy Bone?
Crazy Bone and Wishbone. And to this day, that's probably still like my like top five of her songs.
Totally.
And Rainbow was also a defining moment for me. So she is also on the same level as Janet for me, and I just love her, and I really enjoyed this book a lot, especially listening to the audiobook, The Meaning of Mariah Carey, because
yes,
it was just great to hear her voice and hear her talk about a lot of these songs that I already loved and really dig into those. So let's actually dig into one of the songs. Rich, you chose The Roof, and I think what's interesting about this in the book especially is how specific she gets about the background of that song and the way in which it sort of marked a turning point in her career, especially as an R&B artist, having been primarily defined by being a pop artist while, you know, marrying Tommy Mottola and being under his control at that time. Talk a little bit about what The Roof means to you and sort of the way in which it did mark this defining moment for her career.
Yeah, well, I think what is primarily interesting about Butterfly, if you go back and look at the press, she talked a lot about this music is much more hip-hop inflected than it was previously. She had sort of touched on it, hinted at it, had a few collabos here and there, but this album is pretty much, you know, definitively R&B. And she talked a lot in the press about, like, this is the music I always wanted to be making. And you could always look at sort of press interviews cynically, like people are trying to sell you something, they'll just say whatever to sell it. But she never turned back from that. I think it speaks a lot of sort of her artistry and her character that, you know, Butterfly sold less, markedly less than Daydream and Music Box, which both of which I think are certified diamond. And yet she kept on that route because she'd come into herself in a big way. She called The Roof in the book my first docu-song. So there are two sort of things to think about when you think about her career pre and post Butterfly. The first is the hip-hop influence came in. But the second is that Butterfly, she says in her book, contained songs that were actually about people. You know, it wasn't these, she uses the term far off fictional lovers that she was writing about earlier on. So you could feel the soul come in from multiple angles here. So The Roof in particular is inspired by this like stolen moment that she had with Derek Jeter, who she met at a sort of social dinner, I think, started to text with him, and it starts this sort of burgeoning romance, does this like incredibly sort of intricate deception to get to his apartment. And then she comes back, gets in the car. Mobb Deep's Shook Ones is playing in the car, drives back up to her mansion in upstate New York that she referred to as Sing Sing, that she shared with Tommy Mottola. starts writing the song in her head. It's like this whole beautiful moment that unspools so nicely in the book. It's the perfect sort of way of integrating her life with her artistry in print, as is the song. I just think it takes sort of her artistry up a level, just the lived-in experience.
That's actually a great point. Let's hear a little bit of The Roof. Obviously, she had sort of dabbled in hip hop before that. As I mentioned at the top of the show, Fantasy, the remix with Old Dirty Bastard, was sort of like her first real like dive in and foray into that. Yeah. You could say that if she were to choose hip hop, she might choose something a little bit more like mainstream at the time.
For sure.
I don't know, like Biggie or whatever. And she does in the book at one point say she was hoping to get Biggie on a track and it never worked out, of course. But, you know, the fact that she chose something like Mobb Deep, who were just, if you're a certified hip hop head, they are like the real deal. They weren't necessarily mainstream in that way. And I think that really points to the way in which she really wasn't just a voyeur. She was part of that. It was part of her.
The song itself, it's interesting that, like, you know, that she thinks of it sort of as like almost like a mini documentary, because the lyrics do unfold that way. They give you such clear imagery. And then the video is so good. It's like, yes. I think it's one of her best. It's so stylish. That's like one of my top five Mariah looks of all time.
Totally.
Period.
Flawless.
But hearing how she like really tried to recreate that experience that she had with Derek Jeter through the video itself, like realizing that like we as her fans could be sort of included in this private moment in her life, it felt really special to know that on the back end. But also, The Meaning of Mariah Carey is an incredible book. I have read it. I have listened to it. But that was one of my favorite sections to listen to, because you hear these like really harrowing tales of a difficult childhood and like a really awful marriage and terrible professional relationship with Tommy Mottola. When she's talking about The Roof, you're actually hearing Mariah as like a woman in her 20s who's having like a crush. Finally, she was having an experience that was like in line with her peer group after having to like grow up so fast with her unstable family and then be so like treated so diminutively by Tommy Mottola. It's like even in her inflection when she's like narrating, it takes you right back to how Mariah must have felt at like 25 or 26, just totally head over heels, infatuated with Derek Jeter. It's a feeling that I had, you know, when I was that age. And she says at one point, she felt like there was a sparkle in her eye after that moment. Like she went home and looked in the mirror and there was like a sparkle in her eye. And she felt like there was a spark of desire within her that she thought was long gone or didn't exist. And you could hear it in her voice. And it takes you right back to that moment. And you feel like you're standing looking in the mirror right next to her. For everything that she had gone through, it was so nice to finally feel her have that moment of joy.
I love The Roof. I think it's a great song. Now, Brittany, the song you chose to talk about is Fly Like a Bird. Mm-hmm. Speak a little bit about Fly Like a Bird and what it means to you.
So Fly Like a Bird is the final song on The Emancipation of Mimi, which I think is my favorite Mariah Carey album. It's the one I listen to the most frequently. And that song might be the song that I play the most from that album. It was something that they more so sent to the traditional R&B and gospel stations. And I grew up in the Detroit area where it's like 85% of the radio stations are traditional R&B and they play gospel on Sundays. So that song was huge in the area. Like I didn't have to even listen to the album on the 6-disc changer in my mom's car in 2005. It was like I could turn on the radio and that song was on all the time. And it's very directly a gospel song, but it's also like she played with that sound in the past, but she makes very specific appeals as if she is speaking to God directly.
Yeah. Let's hear a little bit of Fly Like a Bird.
Song, I love it because it's just such an incredible song. It works both as a pop song and a gospel song, because lyrically it really seems to me like it's coming down to a choice between survival and surrender, which is a theme in love songs, and it's also a theme in any sort of spiritual music. And you hear Mariah's God-given voice, which at times sounds sultry in the song, but it still kind of feels kind of right. It's like she sounds sexy when she's talking to Jesus, but like it works. That's so like Mariah, like in a nutshell for me. It really shows and makes clear that Mariah is a singer in the Black R&B tradition. Even another song that's on that album, Circles, that was something where she mentions in the book, she's like, I want to make a song that sounds like something that Aretha would have wanted to record. Interestingly enough, one of my first associations with Mariah Carey was through Aretha Franklin from the first broadcast of Divas Live.
Yes.
In the late 90s on VH1. And I can't remember what song. I think it might have been Chain of Fools that Aretha had Mariah sing with her.
Yeah.
I don't know. I grew up seeing Mariah in Jet magazine every week and also almost monthly, you know, in Ebony. And so I always associated her with Blackness and Black music. But when I hear Fly Like a Bird and I listen to like the themes, which are very in line with gospel music, surviving and, you know, surrendering your will to the Lord, that is in line with so much of the gospel music tradition that traditional R&B came out of. Obviously, we know that Mariah has mastered pop or pop and B or R&B and hip hop collaboration. But I think that was the first time I really felt like, okay, Mariah singing gospel, that has wings. And it really solidified for me the fact that she, you know, has a rightful place in a grand tradition of Black recording artists and Black divas at that level. But it's also a song that, you know, has meant a lot to me over the years and is something that I've turned to. Honestly, I've turned to it throughout this pandemic being locked up at home. So yeah, I think that like that song for me is one of the moments where I really see how Mariah is a master at so many different genres.
Yeah. Rich, do you have thoughts on Fly Like a Bird?
Yeah, I love Fly Like a Bird. I mean, I love Emancipation of Mimi as well. I think like there is sort of a musical theme on that album of this sort of full band sound. It's a very sort of iPod era album in that it does a lot of things and has a lot of producers. But one of the threads that ties it all together is heard in Fly Like a Bird, as well as Circles and Mine Again and If Only You Knew, this sort of like 70s soul sound with the band. And I think that's like a great look for her. I mean, I don't know what the album would have been like if it were all like that. It probably wouldn't have been as commercially viable as it became. Mm-hmm. But it would be interesting to hear her do something like that, because as divas get older, it becomes harder and harder to figure out what to do with your career. Mariah less so, because Mariah, if she had to, could sing standards, I think. But still, it's like, how do you mature and stay relevant in an ageist institution? Really, really difficult. Mm. The Emancipation of Mimi was a good indication of how one might start doing that.
That's a perfect segue into the song that I think really solidified her staying power. And that is We Belong Together, which is interesting because when I was looking at the reviews of the album when it came out, the way in which people talked about it, you know, when Emancipation came out, it was after Glitter had flopped. It was after Charm Bracelet, her ninth studio album, pretty much underperformed, received tepid reviews. And it was also after her quote unquote meltdown on TRL, which she describes in detail in the book and basically blames Carson Daly for not playing wrong. It was funny to hear her talk about how it was like, she says, quote, it was a stunt gone awry. It wasn't my fault. I wasn't crazy. So after all of that, she was down for the count, according to critics, and everyone thought her career was over. And with Emancipation, the way in which people talked about it, they were like, oh, well, she's going back a little bit more to her roots after going too heavy on the hip hop. Even though on this album, she has Snoop Dogg, Pharrell, she's still working with Jermaine Dupri. Like, there's all of these similar tools that she's working with that she's worked with on previous albums. And so they talk about it as if it's sort of this, it's an emancipation, but it's also a rebirth for her. I had forgotten that the song was basically the song of the summer. Like, it was number one for 14 weeks straight. And it's a weird song of the summer to think about, because usually when you think of these things, it's usually an upbeat song. And I feel like it preceded like more recent years where we had like sad Drake songs being number one. Like, it's very much a ballad, just like a power ballad in the best form. There is an interesting piece from Kelly Fassané in the New York Times at the time where he talked about how she has reestablished herself as a neo-disco diva while subtly updating her approach. And that part of the reason why he thought that this song worked as a song of the summer is because she's mixing her lyricism and the way in which she pronounces these lyrics. It's sort of hip-hop inflected. Actually, let's listen a little bit to that song.
When you are on my mind, Bobby Womack's on the radio, sing to me.
If you think you're
doing that. Wait a minute, this is too deep,
too deep.
I gotta change the station, so I turn the dial, trying to catch a break. And then I hear baby face, I only think of you.
Just the way she interpolates those, you know, Bobby Womack and Babyface songs is just sort of hip-hop-y in her Mariah way. And so it's another example of her being able to really adapt and create these different ways of using her voice in the same way like Beyonce does. Like Beyonce went from mostly singing to now she's often rapping or like scat rapping or sing rapping.
You could say that she has a flow in that verse particularly.
Yeah.
And what's interesting too is the second verse's melody is very different from the first verses. So the song feels like it keeps changing, you know?
Yeah, like when you change up a flow, it's like that's what you're always looking for from a rapper is somebody who's going to change up the flow every single stanza. And you're absolutely right. Now that I like play it back in my head, I'm like, oh yeah. Like there's a very traditional mid-tempo R&B like happening in the first verse that's not there in the second verse. It's totally different. It's like you're in a different experience. It's like you walked through a door and you're in a different room of the song.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, I think about what it must have been like to be in the booth when she was doing We Belong Together, because you know that she was like, I did it. I nailed it. As much as she talks about like, oh, I don't care about statistics, whatever, you know that she like
knew she was,
she needed to get back on top. And she found a way to do it. I mean, that song was just undeniable.
I mean, yeah.
Yeah.
The wonderful thing about Mariah's music is it has like a real sort of sense of dynamics.
Mm-hmm.
And if you listen to the mix, her vocal rarely drowns out the beat. It's sort of encased in it. A lot of pop music will have the vocal like really thrust to the front. And then the beat almost feels like an afterthought. But because Mariah cares about Black music and hip hop, the beat is always there with her. She's not like too much of a diva that she needs to outshine the beat. She respects the beat. And that's another huge reason why I love her work so much.
Yeah. And she saves that whistle register for the very end. And it's just like perfect. Like it goes up and then it just fades away and the song just fades and it's just perfect.
The thing I keep thinking about as I thought about this whole, you know, MC 30 moment is a quote that Mariah shared in an interview at the beginning of the whole kickoff for this press tour. She was talking to Allison P. Davis, I believe, for New York Magazine. Mm-hmm. And she made mention of how like her writing this book is her ability to actually be able to reflect on her career in a way that like Whitney, Michael, Prince were not able to. Just as somebody who like writes about, thinks about, and talks about Black culture so much, to have an artist of this level share so much and reflect so intimately. I just think about what an archival gift it really is and how there are so many of like our brightest artists and musicians didn't get that opportunity or didn't live to see that opportunity or weren't afforded that opportunity. You know, obviously this moment is really fun. I, maybe more than a lot of people, are really excited at the prospect of like a Mariah, J-Hud, Ariana Christmas trio. But I think that the impact of this moment with her memoirs is going to live far beyond this moment. And I'm excited to see how her circling back and doing something like this, having this full circle moment with her career. I'm excited to see how that affects the way that other Black musicians eventually, you know, reflect on their songbook in the future. So
I think that's probably the perfect note to end on. Well, we want to know what you think about Mariah Carey and tell us your favorite Mariah songs. You can find us at facebook.com/PCHH and on Twitter at PCHH. And that brings us to the end of our show. Rich and Brittany, thank you so much for being here, darlings.
Thanks, Lamb.
Thank you.
And of course, thank you for listening to Pop Culture Happy Hour from NPR, and we'll see you all tomorrow.
Across America, history is often recorded on small markers. You've probably seen them on the sides of roads, in front of buildings, in the middle of nowhere. NPR's Laura Sullivan spent a year investigating thousands of markers and found a distorted version of America's history, but also curiosities, humor, and joy. Listen to the new episode of The Sunday Story on the Up First podcast from NPR.
There are a lot of issues on voters' minds right now. Six big ones could help decide the election. Guns, reproductive rights, immigration, the economy, healthcare, and the wars overseas. On the Consider This podcast from NPR, we will unpack the debates on these issues and what's at stake. You can listen to NPR's Consider This wherever you get your podcasts.
On It's Been a Minute, we're keeping you in the know when it comes to culture. I break down the latest trends and the forces behind them and introduce you to the creatives who think deeply about how we live today. Come for some good old cultural analysis and have a few laughs with me. Listen to the It's Been a Minute podcast from NPR.